There are clowns here?
That's just Mr. Bones. He's good friends with my dad.
I've never met a clown before. You think you can introduce me?
Tim, there's a circus bear shit on a toilet.
Oh, no.
Mr. Bones, I want you to meet my best friend, Tim.
Oh, I'm a little scared. Is it gonna hurt? Where's your joy buzzer?
I'm not working tonight.
You're in costume.
I just left a job and I have another job right after this.
Well, if you could just do a little something for me, Mr. Bones.
I'm not Mr. Bones right now. My name is Julian and I'm at my friend's birthday party. Please respect my privacy.
Talking about one gag.
Young man, asking me to perform here is like asking a mailman to go for a walk on his day off.
Wait, was that the joke? I guess it's kind of funny.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's Scott Neary. Hi, Scott Neary.
Hi.
That's a good hello.
Well, you took a drink right after you said a greeting to me, and then I thought if I said something short, then you would have to swallow.
Well, that was an opportunity for a spit take, and you just completely removed. All this equipment was going to get ruined.
Racks of equipment would be covered.
We do have racks.
And Kool-Aid.
So thank you for doing this free podcast, as I always thank my guests on a Sunday. You are the producer and star of Scott Neary's Booby Trap. That's what you're most famous for, I think, here in L.A., yes. Among variety performers.
Mm-hmm.
It's been going for 130 what weeks now?
141 weeks.
Every Wednesday. For
every Wednesday.
Three locations now.
Right. Well, we did 1 year in Echo Park, we did 1 year in Mid-City, LA, and now we're doing, since June, we've been in Hollywood on Hollywood Boulevard, right on the Strip.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also done, besides doing those every Wednesday shows, we also have done shows in Oregon Country Fair, in San Diego Fringe Festival, at Kaboom Music Festival in the Electric Lodge in Venice, and shows at the Brewery Art Walk.
And I'm sure you're sick of, you know, talking about this, but my mic is messing with me. I'm sure you're sick of talking about this, but what is the inspiration to keep doing it?
I love talking about things that I know. It makes me feel smart. The inspiration to keep doing it is it's really good. I think there's a social aspect of it. We do shows where we travel all over the world and we fly for hours. We rent a car, drive to a hotel, stay overnight, drive our rental car to the gig, do 30 minutes in front of strangers, and it might not even go well.
Usually doesn't.
Yeah. And then even the best people in the world have challenges with sound. The sound isn't working like they promised, all kinds of different things. So we have this thing, and then we drive the car back to the hotel, stay another night, fly back home, and we're just alone that whole time. So the social aspect of doing Booby Trap is you get to do a really fun show with a bunch of other fun people, and you get to kind of like show off what you do. And sometimes people feel challenged, and they get excited about going on the stage because they're like, oh, that guy got that kind of response.
Sure.
I'm going to get a better response than he did. And I think that's really fun. That's really motivating. And then there's also the performing, like a lot of the people that are entertainers that I know do it because they want to recreate a feeling that they had when they were a kid or when they saw somebody great. And they don't have a chance to do that all the time because they do these shows where they're kind of disabled by whatever the circumstances. So when they come to Booby Trap, they get a chance to, like, even though it's a very stripped down show, it's not fancy, they get a chance to get on stage and do their raw, be their raw selves in front of an audience that cares and is interested and really do the thing that they love. They get to really latch into an audience and do something powerful.
Yeah, I've done it at least 10, 20 times since I've moved here to LA. And I think there's only been one or two times where I got off stage and didn't feel like the crowd was as energetic as I thought they were going to be. But 90% of the time, it's this amazing energy in there. And you end the show with kind of a cool monologue about this is what fun feels like. And I always like try to apply that to when I'm not having a fun show. Not at Booby Trap, but usually at a corporate or something like that, where you're like, I'm clearly doing this for the paycheck.
Yeah.
But
just how do you apply it?
I just replay it in my head, and that's something my wife would say to me all the time. And when we were in China performing 3 months of it, she'd just say, "Just have fun," because at the end of the day, you're just trying to have fun, and you're getting paid to have fun, and you're getting paid to do this thing that you aspired to as a little kid. So tell me how that monologue at the end comes about, because it always kind of throws the audience for a loop for about 10 to 15 seconds. They think you're joking because the show is so absurd and chaotic in a good way, but you get to that point and then it's just this moment of heart and truthfulness. Where did that come from? Was that something that you started from the beginning?
Well, I've done just solo performing with shtick, and it moves pretty fast, and that's what I've done for a long time, just this kind of act where I'm telling a lot of jokes and moving through it. And then when I started doing Booby Trap, I started playing with sincerity a little bit, like, especially because I had complete control over the show and it was up to me. I had the responsibility. I had to find ways sometimes. This is a long answer.
We got time.
No, we don't.
Got at least 45 minutes.
No, I just found out today that I only have 15 megs of RAM on my computer.
Left?
I don't megs. I have 15 gigs of space on my hard drive.
What are you running, an Apple II?
I'm running out.
Commodore 64?
So, and right now I'm downloading a whole bunch of stuff. So time is running out, Nick Paul.
We don't have a very good Wi-Fi connection here, so I'm just going to warn you.
All right. So I started playing with sincerity a little bit, because when I did my solo show, I could dig whatever hole I could lambast the venue. I could have all kinds of fun with. I didn't really have to carry the audience through. Even though I'd provide great entertainment, I didn't have to make the whole experience great, because usually a producer was making the rest of the experience great or whatever. So if I dug a hole by accident because I was going back to old my old patterns, then I realized it, and I would have to, like, sometimes I'd have to get sincere and like say, hey, I just said some really weird things and I do care about this and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
and then I worked with Lindsay Benner on, cause I came up with, because nobody understood what Booby Trap, why it was called Booby Trap. So it was just kind of random. So Lindsay Benner said, why don't you have a story? Why don't you tell people what Booby Trap means? So I started every show at the beginning, I would come up with this weird story of what Booby Trap, why it's called Booby Trap and where it came from. Mm-hmm. And then I also wanted to talk to people about, I found myself talking to people a lot about why I'm really doing it and what it means, because that's when people cared about the show more. That's when people saw that's when entertainers got to see that I cared about the show, that I cared about entertainment, that I cared about them. And that's when audiences got to see that this wasn't just me trying to do something funny, or me trying to get discovered, or whatever the thing that they thought, whatever their story was. I wanted to put the true story in their head. Hmm. So I started talking about things from my past, or the reason how important it is for entertainers to get a chance to perform at Booby Trap, and that helped to reframe things for people. And then, and people got to, because I believe people won't, you can't get people on your, on board with you if you, if they don't know what you're driving, you know?
Yeah. That's something, Billy Crystal has talked about, of like giving them something to take home with them, because for the longest time he was killing, doing great at stand-up, you know, just working his butt off. And I think it was a manager or something that just took him aside and said, you're giving them Chinese food right now. It only lasts about an hour and they kind of forget about it. But you have to give them something to take home with them. And I think you doing that at the top and at the end of Booby Trap definitely solidifies why you're doing it and gives them a piece of humanity in this, this show of just pure chaos when, you know, a man dressed as a snake follows you and eats somebody in the audience, which is still one of my favorite routines that Seth Ward does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's just some beauty in the truth. And that's something I'm struggling with right now as a performer too, of I go back and forth of giving this humanity, this human side to the show, talking about, you know, a personal story, or just making it living in a world of absurdity, because that is more fun and the world is too serious to me sometimes and too human sometimes. So I go back and forth with it. I don't know what your thoughts are about the whole thing.
Yeah, I think we definitely deliver the absurdity with no problem throughout the show, and people come up, especially if they're sitting in a, they're sitting there for 90 minutes, they're going to come up with a story about, they're going to imagine why I'm doing this or why these people are getting on stage, or they're going to imagine all that stuff. They're going to imagine stories about the people around them. And if I don't give them a story, then they're going to come up with their own. So, and my story isn't going to complete the picture for them. They're still going to have to imagine a bunch of stuff about, like, oh, is he lying, or is, like, you know, or just like, sure, he cares about entertainment, but is he also doing this to get discovered? Whatever.
But that's a special place to be in, where the audience is questioning you in a good way.
Yeah.
Because in today's day and age of just like everybody being a great stand-up, they're putting their, you know, their heart on the stage, and they're putting this like, hey, he's my buddy. Look at that. That's my buddy on stage. Hey, we can talk back and forth, break the fourth wall. But there is something so special about trusting someone at the same, it's the Willy Wonka thing of, you know, when Gene Wilder's idea to come out with the cane at the beginning, get stuck, fall, do the somersault, because he told the director, I want to do that because they'll never know if he's telling the truth or lying throughout the rest of that performance. And that's a little bit of what Booby Trap is, a little bit what your character is to me, and I think that's why it works so well.
Yeah. I think there's like, there are different, I haven't thought about it, and it's always good to get, like, for a clown to get it really intellectual. But
that's what this podcast is, just clowns getting intellectual. Oh, that'll be the title of this episode.
I might fall asleep.
we'll take a pie and put it in your face.
I think there's the part where you're delivering the goods, and definitely delivering the goods, and then there's a part where you're telling, where people need to understand why you're doing it, and it makes it, I don't know. I think tell some truth about your life. I think that would be great. You have good intentions, and it's good for people to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes, it adds value to everything that you're doing.
Yeah, I'm learning that doing cruise ships, of watching other performers on there tell their life story or give something. And a lot of cruise ships are older folk, and yeah, man, they just eat that up. They just, oh, that's my grandson on stage. And, you know, you can look at it from a cynical perspective, or you can look at it of, hey, that works, and that gets you a standing ovation at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something to that.
Well, I think it's beyond just the standing ovation, like, you have a message that you're trying to get out by saying that you want everything, you want to give some absurdity to the world because we need it. So But how can you, like, how can you improve your chances of getting that message to them? Because they might see somebody who's like, I might see somebody who's doing all absurd things, and I might think, oh, that person's really trying to escape reality because they can't handle their life, or they have a really sad life, and that's why they need to do this. You know, like, it could be any, they could come up with any story about it, and you can't really, not that you can control it, but you can improve your chances of getting that message across by just having a moment of honesty and sincerity in that.
Yeah, totally. And I've been ending the show with kind of like a personal monologue. And it's funny how like some people get mad at me for talking at the end. Mm-hmm. Like I've had a couple magicians, I did the Magic Cast Hall last week and had a few magicians go, I don't, why'd you talk at the end? And to me, it's my favorite, one of my favorite parts is just to break that fourth wall and to, I guess it comes from an ego perspective of, well, I can also do this too, but that's the way to kind of do what you're doing of just give that truth and give some context for why you're doing what you're doing. So I don't know. It's I think you just kind of have to stick to your guns, and certainly that's what you've been doing with Booby Trap of just, no, this is the way I think it should work, and this is the way that works the best.
Yeah, but if a magician told me not to do it, I wouldn't do it. I would stop.
Oh, well, magicians are leading authorities on all things. And it's funny how it's always, with the exception of one person who I greatly respect, the people who said that to me, I was like, eh.
Yeah.
I won't say anything else because it's just mean. But it's
like, just tell them that it was in the instructions for the trick.
Well, it said at the end of the puppet trick, I have to start talking. It's just, it's in those crappy
it's on
typewriter.
Abbott's,
you know, catalog. I had a weird thing. You know Jack Goldfinger, right? The booking director for the castle. I had a weird thing. We were just chatting. I was on the phone with him, and he's like, pull out the catalog for Abbott's. I'm like, what? And he's like, I'm like, I don't have it with me. He's like, okay, go online, find it. And he just went into this unique, very great professor-like way of, you know, reading a description of a trick and then using that for myself. And it was pretty fascinating. He had me read some illusion, you know, description of what happens. And just the way they described it was a learning lesson in how to, like, sell myself and how to sell the trick. It was like, it's such a weird Yoda moment.
Was he... You were having a trouble with getting gigs, or
I was having trouble with something came up, and we were just kind of going back and forth. I won't go into the details, but it just came out of nowhere, and I was like, "All right, I'm just going to follow you on this," because this went on for like 30 minutes, and it ended up being very helpful.
Yeah, because they're always really short sales pitches.
Yeah,
that make your imagination like. Mm-hmm. They light up your imagination, those little things like, wow.
Yeah, and she gets cut in half as if by magic or just something like that.
Yeah.
And on the surface, like, that's so corny. But if you look kind of beyond that, you see they're selling not just the trick, but they're selling the experience of what the audience is going through.
Right.
And once you see it from that
They're not saying, like, this is a box with a wire in it.
Yeah, because that's how I see most magic. Right. This is when you do a double lift and you pretend to grab a card that isn't magic.
It's got a bunny painted on it.
Well, you know it's legit if it has a bunny painted on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's something to seeing variety performance and live performance in that perspective and it kind of forcing the audience to change the way they see it, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's all I have on that.
I think that, well, obviously, like, I've spent a lifetime doing, not a lifetime, I'm not.
How long have you been doing?
200 years. It's okay, longer than a lifetime.
You look like 175. Tops.
I started before I was born. I was really busy.
Juggling in the
doing, womb. I was one of the top, semen. So
you were a semen and a semen at the same time.
Yeah.
Your mother, you were conceived on a boat.
Yeah. I was doing steerage shows. I've been going since I was 11 doing professional shows, and I'm 39 now.
I'm going to cut you off right now because I just want to say I really miss doing – we used to do a show in Anaheim called Teatro Martini and like a children's version of it. And I just – I miss watching you performing for a lot of tourists, I will say, in suburbanites. And your stuff would always play and work, but it would just take a little bit longer for them to get on board and figure out what you're doing. But it was always such a joy for me to see your character in front of people that shouldn't be getting your character. If that's meant to be respectful.
Okay. And to be fair to me, I was always on during food service.
Yes.
So.
And you would still kill, and you would still always do well when I saw you. So yeah. That's
Thank
a compliment.
You.
Anyway, back to you're 11 years old.
Yeah, I was 11 years old when I started, and I'm 39 now, so I've been doing it for a long time. And obviously, there's something more to it than wanting to get on stage and do some jokes and tricks, because, like, it's not easy. It's not necessarily always really exciting just to get on. If that was my only drive, I wouldn't be doing it. So I think it's legit to tell people that there's something more to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has to, because then I think then it if you're performing for just the attention and you're performing just for what people will say about you, that I think that messes with you harder when you have a bad show, or when you're in like a rough patch of either you're not booking gigs or stuff just isn't happening.
Yeah.
So you have to know. Have to have that other reasoning for doing what you're doing, I think.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Thanks for coming.
Okay. That sums it up.
That's about it.
We're on question one of four.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I literally have five things written, but they're all expansive thoughts. I'm Taylor Hughes. Thank you for having you on, because you guys did like 2 hours or something, and I listened to it on both drives back and forth from Anaheim, and I'm like, oh my God, I need to get Scott on my podcast. So this is just an extension of Taylor Hughes,
nice.
About to break podcast.
Thank you.
Thanks, Taylor Hughes. I'm just ripping you off. What are your aspirations beyond Booby Trap, or would you like, do you see Booby Trap evolving into a TV show, into something else, into a touring show, or just expanding what you guys have already done?
The basic answer that I give to everybody is it is the thing. It is already the dream. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. I love it. So, I would love it if it was the same thing and somebody wanted to film it and give me money, and give all the performers a bunch of money. But right now it already is the thing. We're doing it and loving it. And that's the goal. That's more than I've gotten from any show that I've ever done. So that's that. And then we have some short-term goals of expanding and making it, always trying to make it more run by itself. So growing the audience, currently it's like 70 to 100 people on most Wednesdays mm-hmm. in the audience. So I'd like to get that up to 150 to 200, which is the max for the room. Mm-hmm. And then that'll be a little bit easier for us, as far as it'll make the show more fun for all the entertainers, and it'll be more, we'll have a little bit of money flow because of that. And then we'll be able to pay support staff and give a little bit of money to performers so that it's a little bit more convenient for them. And then just kind of fixing things up, cleaning up the advertising, always improving the lineup of performers, and improving the kind of people that come to watch it.
And we were talking about this. We did a spot on, what was it, Latin TV?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Latin American TV.
And we thought it was LA TV. We got there. I'm like, man, everybody here is from Latin America. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, that makes sense. But we were talking about this backstage of your process of picking acts and picking entertainment.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could comment on that.
Yeah. I have a hard time having – I don't have very much personal taste. I kind of like I don't know if it's just my non-committal nature, but I don't really, I don't get very picky about a lot of things, but with live entertainment, I watch the audience and I see how the audience responds, and that's how I like something. So if I wouldn't want to watch like a performer do even the best stand up. I wouldn't want to watch like Chris Rock do stand up without an audience. I wouldn't care very much about it. I would just, so I like watching the audience. I like seeing what they respond to. And that's the art form. It's not about, or that's the craft. It's not about being good at telling jokes or doing something that pleases me. It's about doing something that is consistently really works with an audience, really entertains an audience no matter what the situation. So that's what pumps me up. And those are the kind of acts I pick. I try to pick people that can consistently show up and do something to the audience.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. It seems like such an obvious thing, but I've done several auditions as a variety performer, and I'm sure you have too, of just going into a room for four people and doing your act.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is not how this is supposed to go. It's about the audience. It's about how the audience is perceiving it. It's that back and forth.
Yeah.
There's no way you're going to get a sense of how you are on stage in front of an audience while performing in front of four people. Yeah. But,
and like my friend Stefan Haves, he's 20 years older than me, and he's helped out with Booby Trap a lot, but he's cast for Cirque du Soleil. He's directed all these big shows, Teatro Zinzani in San Francisco. And he can't watch a video. He can't cast people from a video because it doesn't make any sense to him. Mm-hmm. He couldn't sit in a room and watch an act and pick out which ones are the best. Like, how arrogant do you think you are to like know, like to think that you can figure out what somebody's what their act looks like in front of an audience? Mm-hmm. And the people that excel in those situations, in those like empty rooms, are really terrible. Sure. I think they're mediocre, which is the worst kind of entertainer.
Yeah.
Somebody who can just deliver that exact same canned response, the exact same canned show every time. Those people aren't,
because they're not reacting. They don't know how to react to the room and react to what's the energy that's being given to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. That's it's almost like being a really good auditioner, you know, if mm-hmm. you're an actor, but then getting on set and not being able to play back and forth with who you've been cast with or the director or whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a whole different world. And the audition process is just stupid to me. I hate auditioning. I hate the concept of it, and I think it's all dumb.
Yeah. I've done auditions where the room is empty. I did Teatro Zinzani in San Francisco, and it's a Spiegel tent, like 200 seats, I think, fancy dinner theater thing. Mm-hmm. And they had people. I had a show running in San Francisco for a year. Every weekend they could have come and seen me. And they didn't come and see me perform, and there were multiple chances for them to come see me perform. But then they asked me to do this audition, and I showed up. Excuse me, and they it was empty, and I just made jokes about like, if you guys are having trouble selling tickets, I could go flyer. I hope it's better than this usually.
I can come back.
Yeah.
When you're more successful.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something. Yeah, there's like, that's the reason, among other things, is the reason I didn't get Blue Man after auditioning for many times, because it was one of those things that you're in a small room. The reason I didn't get Cirque, same thing. Cirque du Soleil, because small room. Or at one case, I was on a Cirque stage, but for the single casting director eating peanuts, me and another performer I used to work with at Disney, we always make the joke of just casually eating cashews, watching us do our act that's usually plays to 100-plus people. Just got the message today that I will not be getting America's Got Talent because they've seen everything, which is fine. It's their opinion. It's really cool. But
So why are they still doing seasons?
Exactly. I didn't send them anything new, even though I already did. But none of them came out to see a live show. Never came out to Booby Trap. Never came to a week at the castle.
Yeah.
And Fool Us, too. I'm going through that with Fool Us. It's so funny how these shows that cater to... And it could be I just have nothing to offer at the time. So it could be purely on my end.
Right.
But it's also, going back to what we were just talking about, it is frustrating that they're not seeing you in a live atmosphere, mm-hmm. interacting with the audience. They're only seeing it for, all right, what can you do? What trick can you do? Or what,
right.
what's going to be that great thing that moves us, when in reality it should be moving the audience and, you know, getting a reaction from them.
Yeah. And that's when I did America's Got Talent, I decided I was getting nervous and feeling weird about the whole thing, and I didn't really like it. And it was an early season, so they were pretty mean to everybody. And and I just said, I'm going to like make this fun and weird, and then when I get on stage, I'm going to perform for the audience and not for the judges. So I I had just watched Pumping Iron, the documentary with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's awesome.
And I was like, I'm just going to be the villain. So, nice. So I like, we taped all this stuff beforehand of like me like, hey, Las Vegas, I'm coming for you. I want a bathrobe and a sandwich. and I'm just super cocky. And then in the holding area, which was just huge with all these performers, I stood up. I was with Jerry Springer, was the host, and I stood up and I was like, hey everybody, you can go home. I've already won. And stuff like that. And then when I got on stage, I just like came out and got a big applause. And I was like, yeah, I was just pumped. And then the judges tried to talk to me, and I just brought the audience back up, and
that's
they
awesome. Got
over them. and then they were like, who, what's your name? Scott Neri. How old are you? Are you getting fresh with me? And then I had a big laugh. And then they were like, no, I'm not getting fresh with you. How old are you? And I was like, whatever. I think I was 29. So it was 10 years ago. And then they're like, what are you going to do? And I said, how about if I just show you? And they're like, just tell us what you're going to do. It's kind of redundant because I'm about to do it. and people are like murmuring and like ooing and aahing. And then they're like, just tell us your act. And I was like, I have a backpack on my back and I'm going to take it off. And the audience went crazy. and they were like, okay, so it's a comedy act, right? And I was like, yeah. And I started doing it. There's this monologue about America and freedom. And then I get tangled in the backpack and I escape from it. So I got part of the way through the America freedom monologue and I got three X's from the judges. I was canceled before I got into the actual contortion act of it. So then Knight Rider guy was like,
David Hasselhoff.
He's done a lot of great work since then. I appreciate his work, but,
speak in Germany.
Yeah. He that's what people say. I don't know if that's true.
Probably not true.
It's like his thing. So
you need to cling to something.
So he's like, how is this for freedom? You're free to go. And I was like, you know all about freedom, don't you? Nothing left to lose. and then Sharon Osbourne was like, I didn't get it. And I was like, that's because it's for Americans.
And oh,
everybody's
shit.
Like, what?
Oh, no.
And then Pierce Brosnan, Pierce Morgan.
Pierce Morgan, oh, God.
Whatever. He was just like, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's just not a good act. I should have been prepared for that one because that's like his go-to. Like,
yeah,
it's the worst act he's ever seen.
He's an awful person, yeah.
Yeah. And he doesn't, it's the same thing every time. I should have been prepared for it, but I was just like, okay, whatever. And then when I went off stage, I was like, they were like, how do you feel? And I was like, wow, three X's in a row. I've always loved Hollywood Squares, but I didn't think I'd win. and they were like, you can't use Hollywood Squares. What's another show? But anyway, I got like cast on this other game show that was the same production company. And I said, I can't do both shows. You can't have me on both shows. So if you get America's Got Talent to not show my thing, then I'll be on your other game show.
Oh, weird.
And then they didn't show it. So they they had this whole villain package for me, and they had it all planned out. Wow. But I was just like, yeah, just don't show that.
Wow, that's so smart. Like, what made you think to tell them not to run that?
Because I saw it in the contract to this other game show, and they really wanted us. It was me and Philip Solomon and Rob Kreitz doing this. It was called Hole in the Wall. It's like a wall comes toward you with a hole in it, and you have to. You have to climb through it. You have to fit your body into a shape that gets you through it before you get knocked into a pool of water.
Reality television.
Good TV.
That's funny. That's an amazing America's Got Talent story. That's probably one of my favorites. I've heard a few, but that's definitely one of my favorites. Because the whole thing is just... It's
a lot better now. They've
gotten better. Yeah,
yeah, they're less mean. They're really highlighting some people like Blake Voigt and the... Clairvoyance did a, mm-hmm.
And
they both
Puddles had a great.
Yeah,
I didn't follow up on it. I don't know if they kept him around or what, but he had a brilliant, just like really emotional video that they had of him, and everybody just, it was one of those where they assumed they were just going to X him and make fun of him. But I was so happy to watch him to stand his ground and not break character. And that was so cool.
Yeah.
That was just a beautiful fuck you to the whole thing in a good way of, no, you want me on here? This is how I'm going to... And the way you did it, too. You stayed true to yourself of, all right, if you want me on here, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's that's wild.
How do we come to America's Got Talent?
I don't even know, man.
Stupid auditions.
Auditions. I mentioned... I got the message from my producer buddy today of, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And which is, if you think about it, I was really frustrated to get that, but at the same time, I'm glad he's a good friend of mine and he works at NBC and he's somebody I've known for a while and I appreciate his frankness and I appreciate him saying, hey, this is the deal, as opposed to how it usually goes of, just keep hanging in there. We'll let you know. It's always when I let it go, whatever. It is what it is. I have no control over it. That's when I'll get an email that says, hey, all right, what else you got? Or, hey, this is looking good.
Right.
And it's always like right after I've emotionally or taken the Zen perspective of, it's out of my control. It's out of my...
But you haven't completely taken the Zen perspective.
No.
Because you would be totally cool with that.
You're right. But that's why I'll never be a true Buddhist.
It doesn't... There's so many aspects to it, man. You, like, that has nothing to do with, like, your validity. It's just, like, they're looking for people that were, like, homeless and... They were born, totally. They were raised by wolves and whatever, and they're some great story. And then they're looking for certain types of things, and they have four levels of bosses above them that want different things. And it's too complicated. Mm-hmm.
New thing now is just having a million Instagram followers too, because that's free advertisement for them.
Right.
I think it doesn't, talent doesn't matter as much if they can see a free way to advertise for the show.
Right.
And that's just how it is these days, and that's fine.
Yeah. And it's all a mess, and your job is to show up, do the thing you're asked for, and that's it. And
if they don't want it,
that's just part of, that's not a rejection. It's just they're not asking you for more stuff.
And I know I'm purely being a grumpus about this because no joke, like 45 minutes ago, I got the text. So it's like fresh in my brain at a point of, like I said, I was at a spot of, whatever. It is what it is. Because this has happened so many years in a row now of things looking like they're going to happen and then don't. You'd think I would – I am at a spot of making this podcast all about me. I'm so sorry. But I am
I'll help you get on national TV this year, okay? I promise. It's 2018. You'll be on national TV highlighting your abilities.
Well, I already have been because we were on Latin American TV.
Yeah.
LA TV. So thank you for... I did that last year. So boom, done.
Yeah, that's last year. I'll do this year too. You'll see.
It's more so just for... as stupid as it sounds, just credibility in terms of... Because doing these ships or these corporate events, it looks bad that I haven't been able to accomplish these things. Mm-hmm. And I don't even really want to. I have no need to.
Do they say Nick Paul, who's not been on Fool Us or America's Got
Talent?
It's
at the point where that's going to be in my intro if I don't get on this year. Like Eric Buss and I have both, he's in the same boat too, where it's like it looks like it's going to happen and hasn't. So it's no joke that will be in my intro of ask not to be on America's Got Talent and Fool Us. Please welcome
Nick
Paul.
Why would you put that in your intro?
Why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's funny.
Think of an Abbott's catalog.
All right. Open up the description for Song A Lady in Half. Read it to me. Man, what a day. What a phone call with that Jack Goldfinger. He's the Yoda of our time.
He's been on LA TV as if by magic. No wires or magnets involved.
Oh, man.
$4.99.
Pack small, plays big. What is your, you can relate this to, I ask this to everybody who I've interviewed, you can relate this to Booby Trap or you can relate this to a personal experience. What is your worst gig story and what is your best, in your opinion, best gig story? You don't have
pass.
To do, pass? Okay. You don't have anything else written down.
Oh no. We might have to have an organic conversation.
Well, that's kind of what we've been doing. I only wrote 4 things down and we're at 41 minutes, so I think that's pretty good. And I bitched about not getting about America's Got Talent for 10 minutes, so that's, as usual, I brought it about myself.
I don't have a worst gig. I have...
anything that felt like kind of uncomfortable that you... I guess you already talked about that, your experience auditioning for Teatro Zanzini and other things.
Yeah.
Just kind of making an awkward situation your bitch in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because you're very talented doing that.
I didn't own it. Like I went on America's Got Talent. I got 3 X's. I went to the Zanzani audition and they passed on me. So I didn't yes, conquered that.
Nailed it.
I just walked out without like crying pretty much. I don't know. One pivotal show in LA was this, it was the highest paid corporate show I'd done at the time, and it was probably like 8 years ago, and it was in this fancy hotel. They the sound guy was a DJ, so like sometimes they'll just hire a DJ and think that takes care of the sound issues.
What are you talking about? It always does.
Yeah.
You got an input? What? No.
Yeah, so they set it up. We did I kind of forced them to do a tech rehearsal just to make sure that my audio would work. And then as soon as we got into the show, my microphone didn't work.
Nice.
It was feeding back like crazy. It was an echoey room and they didn't know how to deal with it. Then their microphone didn't work. So I ended up doing a 500 person spread out giant room with just my voice, just shouting jokes at people.
That's awesome.
And that was very difficult. So I look at that as like an example of the kind of things I want to prevent in entertainment. I like to make things where people can excel, where, and because it was such a fancy, expensive, like.
Well, that's the irony of any corporate event. They put so much money into everything except the not even little details, just the things that you think would be obvious of being able to hear the performer, being able to see the performer. Yeah. I did 5 or 6 corporate events in December, which is more than I usually do. And most of them were me performing on a dance floor when there was a stage behind me that the DJ took the entire thing up. Hmm. And everybody was at round table, so they couldn't see the show.
Yeah.
And it's like, you put all this money into like flying me out here and paying for food and the venue. And all you got to do is get some lights and a stage too and make it, you know.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. But yeah. So that's a good goal to have of making those things better.
Yeah. And we, I don't know, even like, even that show we did in Orange County, it was like, there's certain aspects of fanciness that are completely lost on an audience. We just like, everybody tries to smooth things over so much and make things clean and straightforward when, like you were saying that the world is too human. And I think that the world isn't, we don't see the all the aspects of humanity enough in order to appreciate ourselves. And when you see a show that's very human, very flawed and real and honest, and then people are still excelling in that situation, that's really powerful to me. That tells me something about myself, about how much I can achieve and about how I can do more with my life. And just like the stories on America's Got Talent, where they're like, this person was born with no nose, nervous system, yeah,
and nervous system,
no nose or nervous system.
which one's worse?
and they've done all this amazing, and now they're a professional smeller, whatever. So
figured out a way around it.
Yeah, those are like, that's what people want. And
yeah, you want that. I mean, that's why reality TV works, is people, they do want that feel good story, and they do want the enemy, and they do want, I think they ultimately want to see either how their life could be better or that their life isn't as bad as they think it is in many ways.
Yeah. I think we're entering a golden age of shame where we're like, there are more people than ever that are getting into rehab programs and 12-step programs and going to therapy to work on all their shame issues. And we're exposing a lot of things that have been thought of as shameful. Like
read John Ronson's, is it Ron Johnson or John Ronson? One of the two. Oh,
Don Johnson.
Yes. He's a book out called So You've Been Publicly Shamed? Or is it The Art of... No, it's So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And he interviews all these people that have had those experiences, like whether on Twitter or whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's just fascinating to... Yeah, what they did was really mean and bad, but when you look at their intention behind it, they weren't trying to hurt people. A lot of times they were just trying to make a joke that failed miserably, and the internet attacked them and, you know, lashed out at them.
Right.
And you see what it does to good people. Sorry, I cut you off.
And there are like actions that people take that do hurt people, and we don't need to shame people for that either. And we're learning how that stuff works. And
sure,
we, that stuff needs to be dealt with. And the way to deal with people doing shameful things is not to shame them. It's to get them help, get them away from people that they're hurting, for sure.
Sure.
And take care of that stuff. And I think as we realize that people aren't monsters, we can start to love ourselves more, and we're going to be able to get a lot more accomplished as humanity. So that's my goal as a pancake juggler.
Pancake juggler changes the world one pancake at a time.
But because of those iconic gigs where everything goes like really weird, and you just don't have the power to do a great job, that's why Booby Trap is the way it is. It's so rough. It has like a certain essence of uncomfortability to it. You can see that we didn't do a tech rehearsal. You can see that the stage is shaky. Like there's...
I'm very glad you guys fixed that stage, by the way, because there was a part where the stage was literally just coming down.
Like, it's a little bit better.
This is really tough for mime because you got to move.
We're still working on it, but it's, yeah, I don't try to clean up the parts that aren't important to getting that power across to an audience.
Well, that's what's so great, and that's why I look forward to doing Booby Trap, because it is this weird space where you can kind of just perform and do the show that you want and intend to, because a lot of time, I think, is spent, if you are a professional performer, of doing gigs that are not bad, but they are what you just described, of the sound doesn't work or this doesn't work, and – you spend so much time worrying about that that you don't really get to enjoy the performance. So doing shows like Booby Trap allows you to get up there for your 4 minutes and go be in, you know, a bliss of sorts of getting to do what you want to do the way you want to do it. Because I think that's the dirty secret about being a full-time performer. 90% of the time, you know, it's not going to go the way you think. Or if you're not a performer, you're not seeing all the weird little things that have gone wrong that you're trying to cover up to keep the show running smoothly.
Yeah. And I think another aspect of it that's fun is, I don't think the improv is great to watch, but there is the aspect of it that is great is that the audience knows the game. They know that these people are trying to make up a thing on the spot, and they're trying to...
Improv is like, I always say, improv is like mentalism or magic. It's either... improv is like mentalism. It's either, when it's done well, it's magical. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And when it's done poorly, it's very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And... yeah, sorry, cut off your improv point. So just like, keep interjecting when you have great points.
I think that's cool because the audience knows the game, and it's like, and they know what the rules of the game are. Same with watching a sport, you know what these people are achieving. It might be hard to tell how great they are at it, but you still know that they're way better than you, and that they have these specific rules that they're playing by. So. Booby Trap also has that, and the game isn't necessarily try to make make a magic trick that fools us or to do some juggling that's impressive. It's more like how do you make something that's really fun that gets us on board and gets us to like you in the 4 minutes with lights going on, the band playing, with a shaky stage, with sound cues that might not happen, with in an environment where you're pretty naked on stage.
Yeah.
It isn't fancy. You don't have like any credibility. So how are you going to go on stage right now and in 4 minutes prove to us that you're worthy of being here? And that's the game the whole audience is on board with. And they're all enjoying watching people do their best, and and everybody in one way or another, everybody is succeeding at it.
With the exception of one that I can remember, I will not call out, but I remember your response when you came back on stage was, "Hey everybody, that's what 4 minutes feels like." And the audience was just so relieved that you called out that 4 minutes of awkwardness, because that's usually not the case.
Yeah.
Usually, even if an act is there's still some redeeming qualities to it. You're like, "Okay, I can see what they're doing. They're trying something here." But in that instance it kept everybody on board, and everybody knew the game of what was happening in that show. Right.
And that person, by me doing that, instead of trying to smooth it over and go, "That was amazing, now let's see the next act," because I didn't smooth it over, that act had a purpose. That act could have been just, it could have completely, if I come on and say that was wonderful, then that act is serving to discredit me. Mm-hmm. I become like a person that is no longer the generous host of the audience who welcomes everybody in and makes them feel good. I'm a person who's lying to them and not sincere, and I'm not on their side anymore. And by me telling the truth, by me talking about how the audience responded to that, I'm giving that act a chance to serve a positive purpose in the show, where everybody's like, "Oh, okay, mm-hmm. we're having fun. This mm-hmm. could be anything. We're going to survive it. We're going to love it. And we're going to see something crazy to appreciate about it. It isn't just going to be about us like feeling uncomfortable and trying to make everything okay for ourselves. It's going to be like, it's going to be enjoyable."
Yeah.
I don't care what happens, because mm-hmm. this is going to be fun.
And I like that you put those acts like usually second or third in mm-hmm. the running order, just so the audience, it's a great way to show the audience. You always start with something amazing, and then the second or third is going to be really effing weird, And just so you can show the audience, hey, it's either going to be this or it's going to be this, but you're going to have a good time.
Yeah.
And I think that's so smart to do.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, the format, the order of the show has come, it's started to tell me what it is after a while. Because I had a show that was a lot of circus and variety acts, and then I had a freak show kind of act where this guy like stuck needles through his biceps, and I put him like the seventh act in. There are 15 acts in a show. I put him like the seventh act in, and people were weirded out because they were like on board with all this happy-go-lucky, these acts that were just straight ahead fun. And then he brought something that really challenged them, and people were really, it was really visceral. And I didn't want that to happen for the audience or for him, because he had something like he's been working forever and he does this great thing that's really amazing to watch. But because of the position I put him in, the audience wasn't able to appreciate it and he wasn't able to do his best. And and I learned that I needed to set up the scenario a little bit to let people know that this could come from any direction and just enjoy it, whatever it is. And and you can sink into it.
That's awesome. Well, any final thoughts, words of wisdom for performers out there before we...
Who listens to this?
Nobody.
No.
I'm not even going to release this. This is for my archives.
I don't have any advice for you.
Well, not for me.
You said you're the only one.
Oh, that's true. I just lied twice.
You're a magician.
Anything you've learned over the years that you kind of remember after... before every show?
One thing I've learned is, because I've been performing for a long time, I don't really feel stage fright, or I don't even feel amped a lot of times. I could go on stage completely relaxed and do nothing pretty much. And so I have to pump myself up before I get on stage, because it's worth it to me to be at a heightened state for the audience. So
how do you play with that of going up and down? Because you're on stage and then you're off, and you're on stage and you're off, especially at Booby Trap. And that's something I struggle with, of it just kills my energy. If I do a show, have 45 down, have to do another one.
Yeah.
And it's something I'm used to doing, but it's just, that's where the exhaustion comes in, of just re-amping yourself up. So is there any tricks you've learned?
I dedicate myself to sleep. I have like a ton of stuff that I do. Like if you look up sleep hygiene on the internet, it's just like a bunch of things you do, like try not to eat before bed and exercise before bed and stuff like that. So, I try to make sure that I eat a lot, because I'll travel and I'll forget to eat, or I won't take care of my diet. So mostly it's not about eating super healthy food. It's just eating enough calories for me. Because if I don't do that, then I get really bad. I get like adrenaline problems. And then I just take care of my sleep hygiene, do my best to really concentrate on sleep. So if I have a show and then the next day I know I have a show and it's a late night, then as soon as I get done with the show, I'll concentrate on getting into a restful state as soon as I'm done. And that takes up a lot more time, more of my day than I might have liked years ago. So I'll need to sleep. Usually 9 hours is good for me. And then I do more hours of chilling out, turning off screens, being in the dark a lot, doing simple non-visceral activities. And so that's really helpful. And then I don't know what else.
I think just energy management is something you don't really think about, but is super important. And that's good for me to hear too, because I've adopted a few of those techniques as well. And it does make a big difference on show days, or on days of, you know, knowing that your energy is going to have to go up and down. Like last week when I was doing the late parlor at the castle, which means your first show's not till 10:15 and your last show's at midnight or 12:30. Yeah. So you have the whole day to kill, essentially. And at the point when I would normally be going to bed, I now have to go do a show. And fighting sickness. I was getting back from Michigan and had a cold. And it's wild how it's amazing what your body can do, because on paper I couldn't do that. I could not pull that off. But by practicing some of the things you just described and, you know, kind of keeping a level head and not overthinking it and overusing too much energy and eating properly, you're able to pull it off. But it's definitely a number on your body. I can imagine it's akin to being in the military or being a policeman or something, where you're constantly like, your energy is just all over the place.
Yeah. And like my wife did the North American tour with Mamma Mia, and she was like doing, sometimes she'd do a show in one place in the day and then a show in some other place at night.
Wow.
And they're 2-hour shows of like dancing in high heels and singing. And singing is like a really big physical effort that takes health and a lot of control and stuff like that. So they're doing these shows. They're traveling around in a tour bus together. They're all sick all the time. They're all just getting sick constantly. They're getting injured like crazy. They're all having trouble with sleep. And the people that are, so the job isn't to be able to get on stage. The job is to be able to make it to stage. Like,
yeah, stay alive.
Yeah, stay alive. So the people that are like the real pros really come through. I mean, there are young people on the tour that are kind of able to survive, but they'll get some like massive injury all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But the real pros are the people that are like, oh, I have lemon and water at night after the show, and I go back to my hotel room and I have a scarf on when I'm walking back from the theater. You know, mm-hmm. They're like, it's their job to stay healthy. That's all they're doing all day long, mm-hmm. is they're taking care of themselves, and they're not going out drinking and they're not partying, and they're trying to deal with, they're just dealing with the road life and trying to make that stuff. And that's really informative to me. And that's the thing I've learned a lot with Booby Trap too, is I get to see a lot of performers now, and I get to see in depth how they negotiate contracts, how they talk to people, how they show up for gigs, and the professional side of all that stuff.
Sorry for all that too.
I get to see how people don't. And
I just didn't want to sign the contract, and I didn't want to perform that night.
Yeah. I get to see all that stuff, and it's really informative to me how much that stuff matters, and
mm-hmm.
That impact that I'm having by trying to skip over that and get away with just showing up and being a badass and not doing anything else.
Well, it's not hard for you.
Yeah.
Scott Neary, badass. It's on your business card.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, thank you for doing this podcast. Good to chat with you.
Thank you. Don't you want to do more?
I'm good.
Awesome. Thank you guys for listening.
Oh, and what's the website? BoobyLA.com?
Yeah, BoobyLA.com. And or you can just search for Booby Trap Scott Neary.
Every Wednesday, whatever. Hollywood.
Yeah.
Go see the show. Yeah. 8 o'clock?
8 o'clock every Wednesday. If you're broke, which based on the demographics of this podcast, I would say you're probably Nick Paul.
Just because it's a free podcast doesn't mean.
Just let me know if you have trouble affording tickets. You're a performer or whatever, and I'll help you out. But I just want everybody to be a part of it, and not everybody, the cool people, smart people, interesting, curious people. I want them to be a part of it. So I'd love to have you.
Cool. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Two Magicians, One Mic podcasts. Please rate us on iTunes. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.twomagiciansonemic.com. Send fan mail or hate mail to twomagiciansonemic@gmail.com. Have a great week.